You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, the Vietnam War era was a time of great upheaval here in Wisconsin and across the nation. We talk about the pivotal years of 1969 and 1970.
First, President Obama met with military advisors to discuss ISIS. A press conference today, this afternoon, he spoke to lay out strategies.
Joining us to discuss the president's remarks and whether they represent a new direction in the nation's counterterrorism efforts is Don Heider-Markell. He's a professor of political science at the University of Kansas. He specializes in civil rights, criminal justice, and counterterrorism. Don, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
So how would you summarize what the president's plan is for defeating ISIS? Has it changed? Has it shifted?
Well, from what I've heard, there's not a big dramatic change in the policy, and the policy is largely one of counterterrorism operations that don't directly involve the use of United States military force, but largely through intelligence and cooperating with other countries from Europe to the Middle East. And then when that cooperation allows for the use of U.S. military force, and it's advised by the armed services, the president has gone forward with that. But it's certainly not one of a large footprint on the ground to combat ISIS in Iraq, Syria, or in Libya.
Well, and as you just outlined there are so many pieces to this ISIS puzzle, and the approach to defeating them can be hard to kind of gauge what has happened and whether there's progress or losing ground. This is how the president gave an overview of the situation.
2 years ago, ISIL was racing across Iraq to the outskirts of Baghdad itself, and to many observers, ISIL looked invincible. Since then, in Iraq, ISIL has lost at the Manjib Dam, at Tikrit, at Beji, at Sinjar, at Ramadi, at Heep, at Rudba, and now Fallujah. In Syria, ISIL's lost at Kobani and Tal Abayad, and the Tishrin Dam and al-Shaddadi. ISIL has lost territory across vast stretches of the border with Turkey and almost all major transit routes into Raqqa. And in both Iraq and Syria, ISIL has not been able to reclaim any significant territory that they have lost. So I want to repeat, ISIL has not had a major successful offensive operation in either Syria or Iraq in a full year. Even ISIL's leaders know they're going to keep losing.
So from how the president laid out chronologically and geographically the losses that ISIS has suffered, it would seem that the U.S. and its allies are succeeding, but that's not the general tone in the nation and in the public opinion.
No, and part of the difficulty here is that ISIS has not operated in the same way as a traditional terrorist organization has. By claiming large swaths of territory and trying to hold those territories and govern those territories, they've acted somewhat more like a nation state than a terrorist organization. And now they're sort of being pushed back into operating more like a traditional terrorist organization. They've lost ground, and for them, that is a failure. But for, as I say, for a traditional terrorist organization, that's not a primary objective of the organization. So I think in some ways you see here comparing ISIS to Al-Qaeda or other groups that people might be more aware of, you can see that the sort of advances that have been made against ISIS for our typical ways of thinking about a terrorist organization, they don't seem like tremendous gains. They're still able to operate. They're still able to carry out attacks in the Middle East, in Europe. They're still able to inspire others in the West. And therefore, they seem to somehow be succeeding. But that's sort of then folding them into the model of the typical terrorist group. And I think in some ways, for many, many years, they'll be able to be successful at that level, low-level kinds of attacks, be it in the West or elsewhere. Even if they lose 99% of their territory, they're going to be able to pull off those kinds of attacks.
In the NPR coverage leading up to the press conference, commentator Ron Elving, actually with some frustration in his own voice, asked why it is that if if ISIS is in retreat or is losing ground, is being hemmed in, why, with the combined power of the U.S. and its allies, it is so hard to just, as he put it, obliterate ISIS? Why is it? You said that they will probably continue to be able to function. Why is it so hard to completely eliminate that threat?
Well, we can't ever completely eliminate a threat from individuals who seek to inspire or even carry out small scale attacks on their own. As long as they're motivated by the ideology that they have, they'll always find somebody to do that. They don't need tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of supporters. What they need is just a few people that are always willing to go forward with their agenda. The difference is here, I think, in part, we could go into Iraq, we could even go into Syria, we could go into Libya, and we have the military force to completely eliminate most of the active members of ISIS in those areas. But that doesn't put an end to ISIS. There will still be adherents. New adherents will be inspired by past actions of ISIS. You don't simply eliminate the ideology. You can eliminate primary members of the group, but you can't eliminate the ideology. The other part is, if you go in and take them out of those areas, then who governs? Who rules then? In Iraq and Syria and even in Libya, the existing governments have already shown that they've been ineffective at governance. And who takes over then? The whole reason Iraq and Syria were such large areas of those countries were taken over by ISIS is because there was no legitimate government in large portions of those countries, and ISIS came in and took over that role. So I think it's not just a question of can we use military force, can we eliminate most of this group with military force. We can. It's simply what comes after that, and the fact that the threat of terrorism and extremist ideologies doesn't just disappear because you get rid of primary adherents. There still will be those that are inspired.
We're talking with Don Heider-Markell, a professor of political science at the University of Kansas, about President Obama's press conference today on future strategies to defeat ISIS. And you were just talking, Don, about kind of what happens in that vacuum if ISIS is further and further isolated and maybe not rendered completely powerless, but has its power and control limited. He talked about what might happen in that decline.
The decline of ISIL in Syria and Iraq appears to be causing it to shift to tactics that we've seen before, an even greater emphasis on encouraging high-profile terrorist attacks, including in the United States.
So there, it sounds something of a warning to the U.S. public and to the populations of our allied nations that this could actually see more violence from ISIS instead of less.
Right, and that's typically what we see from terrorist organizations, whether it's sort of targeted efforts to take out leadership or targeted efforts to harm large portions of the group. The response is typically one of increased levels of violence, increased dramatic violence, even if those are relatively small scale, to show that the group is still active and for potential new leaders to show to their followers that they have the sort of guts to sort of carry out these dramatic kinds of attacks. So this is very common. Even other kinds of large-scale groups like the Taliban in Afghanistan, this has been the sort of common response to taking out leaders or to failures by the group in controlling areas of Afghanistan has been to sort of lash out with a bunch of quick acts of violence and demonstrate that they are still active.
One of the things that President Obama said was kind of drawing a distinction between the U.S. and allies purposely trying to avoid civilian casualties, whereas ISIS trying to cause civilian casualties to kind of strike fear into the hearts of civilian populations. But I'm wondering, you who studies counterterrorism and not just our responses, but, you know, how the other side is thinking and their perceptions, I'm not sure that people on the ground in Syria, Libya, Iraq would agree with the fact that the U.S. and its allies are always good about avoiding civilians.
No, and even if we've gotten much better at it, and I think we have, there's still a large-scale narrative out there that you know, and examples you can point to where civilians were killed dramatically, where women and children are killed in a strike or a special operations operation, and those kinds of circumstances will always sort of be available. That counter narrative is always out there, and unless we were absolutely perfect at ensuring no civilians were killed, I think that potential is always there.
The president also talked about some recent intelligence finds.
As ISIL's beaten back, we're gaining vast amounts of intelligence, thousands of documents, thumb drives, digital files, which we will use to keep destroying ISIL's networks and stop foreign fighters.
So I think anyone would say more intelligence is better than less, but it seems the way you were describing the shift in ISIS and their tactics and what we've just seen as far as attacks in the U.S. and in our allied countries, these are not necessarily people carrying out attacks who are even on the radar or might even be within the ISIS network officially to even be turn up in that intelligence.
That's right. I mean, the greatest kinds of threats that we potentially face are those so-called lone wolf attackers who don't really have any connection to the group, who are sort of self-radicalized or self-inspired by the group's propaganda. And those people, like any regular criminal, are really hard to uncover because they're not engaged in the kinds of activities that we're actively monitoring. And therefore, you know, they only, in order to carry out their attack, they only have to get it right one time, whereas those trying to prevent or defend that kind of attack have to be right 100% of the time to make sure it doesn't happen. And that's simply not possible. I mean, no counterterrorism effort can be 100% correct all of the time.
Well, Don, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
That was Don Hyder-Markell. He's a professor of political science at the University of Kansas. He specializes in civil rights, criminal justice, and counterterrorism. And he was with us to discuss what President Obama spoke about at a press conference this afternoon after meeting with military leaders and advisors on the continuing fight against ISIS.
Coming up, Wisconsin was a hotbed of anti-war sentiment and activity in the late 1960s. We'll talk to the author of a new book that tells the story of that unrest through first-person accounts. I'm Rob Ferrick.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.